honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. If you pull up the video of this week's Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony for the Chinese-American veterans of World War II, you will see several surviving veterans accepting their medals, all very grateful that they lived to see this day. Another veteran who feels that way is Ray Lee of Fresno, California. He's had to adjust to meeting his normal Thursday morning coffee club on Zoom now because of COVID-19, and he's waiting for the Veterans Memorial Museum to reopen. There's a room there named in his honor for all of his volunteer work at the museum over the years. Ray grew up in the small town of Coalinga, California, where his family owned the China Cafe.
We had about two Asian family beside ourselves, one Korean and two Chinese family. Two of them was running a grocery store, and one had one Korean family working out in the oil field, Standard 25D, and that was about it.
Well, you told me your class of 1942. So that tells me that your senior year at Coalinga High School, the world changed a little bit. Do you remember December 7th, 1941?
You better believe it. Me and my dad was going down to the restaurant. We were riding in this vehicle, and then we got to the back alley. We pulled in, and our neighbor next door had a dry cleaning establishment, and he hollered over the fence that Pearl Harbor had been attacked by the Japanese. And we didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. I said, "Where's Pearl Harbor?" My dad said, "I don't know." He asked me, "Do you know where it is?" I said, "No, I don't." So we had the radio going on all night and found out it was in Hawaii. And it was quite a shock, yeah. And then we was thinking, geez, we're going to have to get involved in this, which we did.
Well, and what was it like at school the next day?
Everybody knew about Pearl Harbor. Everybody was in a state of shock. And we had several high school students that graduated before our class did. They were in the military. Some of them were lost in Corregidor and when they got overrun by the Japanese in the Philippines.
Well, when did you end up in the Army? And what about your brother? Which one of you went in the service first?
My brother did. He went in the Navy first. And I tried to get in the Navy, but the quota was all filled up. I tried to get in the Air Force, the quota was filled up. So I tried the organization that I really liked, but there was no opening. So I decided, I'm not going to wait any longer. I went down the draft board, told my head, I want an immediate induction. I want to get the thing over with. So I volunteered. Had the draft board take me in.
How did your family feel about that, about you and your brother going off to war?
Well, they had no choice. They knew that we had to do it. We had to go and do our duty. We had to go and show people that we were proud of what we are, so we all volunteered. They sent us to Camps San Luis Obispo for amphibious training. When they say amphibious training, I knew where we were headed for, Pacific. So we took a Camp Cook, went to Camp Cook, Camp San Luis Obispo. They run us up and down the Pacific coast, landing on the 101 highway. They had to stop the traffic, and we had to land there, participate in invasion. All infantry guys go up the hill, and we come in with the LCVP, and we had the life belt around our side, and then we drop. As soon as we hit the beach, we drop the life belt, and then you run. You can't run. Everybody was seasick. The sand was sandy. You know how sandy? You're trying to carry heavy equipment, a litter or something like that. You just can't move. Just like you're just paralyzed. And the Marine standing there, he was instructing us, run, run, get off of the ground, run. Trying to get us off the ground. We were too sick, seasick. We were riding in those LCVP, the circle, smelling the diesel smoke. Everybody was sick.
That doesn't sound very encouraging. That wouldn't give you a whole lot of confidence to do that for real overseas.
Well, we were supposed to land, our division was supposed to land in Tokyo Bay. There were three divisions involved, the 95th, the 97th, and then 104th. We were supposed to be the frontal attack. We were supposed to be involved in that. Good thing that I signed an armistice. Otherwise, I won't be around to tell you what happened. Yeah. But anyhow, the war came to a halt, so we landed. They didn't have no pier to unload the troops. We had to take our LCVP, hit the beach, get off, just like you make it a dry run on an invasion.
But you saw a whole lot more of the world before that. So you're training for the Pacific, but then the Battle of the Bulge happens, and there's casualties, casualties, casualties. So they pull your division and say, you're going to Europe?
I was surprised. I thank the Lord that we were going back to Europe instead of going to the Pacific. If we'd gone to the Pacific, I wouldn't be here to tell you what I was involved in. Anyhow, we order changed, so we had to go back to Camp Kilmer. Well, that's where we shipped out, POE. Wake up next morning, I never seen so many ships around us. Man, there was a whole bunch of ships.
So what did you encounter once you got to Europe?
Well, shocked me when we landed in Le Havre, France, and then we all took off. Get into the 2.5-ton truck that took us to Fay Camp, and I looked around at the harbor. Everything was all shot up, burned, completely demolished. I'd never seen so much wreckage. Man, it was a shock. And then we went to the village, and I seen burnt-out buildings, and it was more of a shock. And then they got us to Camp Lucky Strike. They had Camp Lucky Strike, Camp Oko, Camp different cigarette. They had different camp to prepare yourself to get ready to go to get assigned to one of the army that's on the line. So the engineer had us learn how to dig up mines, landmines, booby traps. We didn't know anything about it. They were blowing off explosives all the time just to get us used to the sound. And that was kind of scary. And then we had to learn how to dig up the mine. I had three guys in the line go out and dig up the mine, Teller mine, glass mine, S mine, and I didn't know what the heck S mine and booby trap, all that stuff, but I sure learned a lot. The engineer was blowing up explosives just to get us accustomed to it.
Here you're trained to be a medic, and now they're saying you're going to be disabling these mines that can kill you if you make a wrong move. How nerve-wracking is that to try to pull up a mine without it going off?
Well, you know, they're teaching us when you probe it in the ground, you go at a certain degree. You don't go directly on top. You might set off that explosive. So they tell us when you dig up a mine, you holler mine, two of your buddy back off, and you're responsible for the mine. And he said, never dig up the first mine. They have another one behind it, a pressure mine underneath it. You lift off the top, another one goes off. The Germans were really smart. They were really clever. Everything that they manufactured was right to the teeth, not like a Mickey Mouse. They were completely to the teeth. They got fine equipment.
I'm just thinking, is that where you celebrated your 21st birthday? In Europe, right after you got there?
Well, I didn't have time to think about that. I was thinking about hoping the heck I'd come out alive. That was the main thing. We were thinking about that. We don't want to step on a mine, and that was it. They got a lot of mine out there. Yeah. So they had to light up an area with a ribbon, stay on the path. Otherwise, a lot of minefield around you. Especially in France, they had a lot of minefield. I didn't know what a mine was, but I shouldn't find out.
I'm sure there are a lot of things that you saw that you'd never seen before. Where all did you guys go with the 97th Infantry Division?
Well, we were assigned to the Rhine River. And we had to clean up the Ruhr pocket. They had a pocket up there where our division went up there and cleaned it out. And we took Cologne and Dusseldorf, those two big cities. Just kept going. We were assigned to old General Patton. That guy, he didn't know when to stop. It was constantly going, you know. Every time we could start going, I said, where are we headed for? Nobody knows. We're just going, got our orders to head straight ahead. I was up there at the battalion aid station, and we would have some patient come in. They were wounded. Well, we had a battalion surgeon. He would check them out and decide what to give them. So we would follow up on their battalion surgeon's order, we give them bandages and few things like medication, stuff like that. In a serious case, we would send them back to the clearing company. They would send them back to an evacuation hospital where they had more equipment to take care of the person. We just have just a minor item up as like having a Band-Aid. We just give them Band-Aid treatment. That's all we had up there. We didn't have all the heavy equipment like the evacuation hospital.
So are you saying you didn't see too many of the serious wounds? Or were there some things that you witnessed that you still think back on and you say, man, that guy sacrificed a lot for his country?
Yeah, you know, I've seen some, I don't want to talk about it, I've seen some pretty bad stuff. We had some German prisoner come in. The poor guy was shot up pretty bad. And we couldn't travel at night. We stayed indoor because if you travel at night, you will get shot. So we stayed in a little house, and this guy, German prisoner, was in the other room. He was moaning all night long. Man, we couldn't sleep. He was moaning all night long till daylight, and it was pretty hard to take. And in the morning, we evacuated him on a litter. We took him out, get ready to put him in the ambulance, and I said, he's gone. Don't use put him in the ambulance. We might as well leave him right here for the German civilian to put him away. You know, that was something I never forget.
Did that experience of being a medic with the 97th Infantry Division as you're going across Europe, you know, in early 1945, did that give you an impression or an understanding of how much courage these American soldiers had? Can you maybe give us an example that comes to mind of what illustrated that for you?
Well, we came up on the Rhine River at night. We were assigned on a certain area, and it was raining cats and dogs and lightning, and we were standing up there like some troop back over to the German side. They were sending both sides were reconnoising on reconnaissance, and they were checking our defense out, and we were checking those guys out. And finally, we got word that the 101st Airborne was going to take that position, so we moved out. The 101st came in, took the line of defense right there on the Rhine River. I was glad I didn't have no weapon. Boy, I sure feel naked out there. What are we doing out here? It was just like a bunch of jaybirds, you know, no weapon, just a medical kit. That was crazy.
And how did you cross the Rhine?
Across the Rhine, they had a pontoon bridge. An engineer got together, got the pontoon bridge, so we went across in our ambulance. We had an ambulance. Our company had some ambulance, and I was in the litter platoon. We did all the dirty work, you know. The other guy, they sit back and they were in the luxury. We did the dirty work. We moved into this little town, little village, like, and we seen a lot of white sheet hanging out on the window of the doors in the village, and we was out there chewing a rag. Pretty soon I looked up, there was a company of infantry was coming up the road. There were platoon size. They were on each side of the road, and the captain was leading them, and he come up to me and he said, what are you people doing up here? I said, isn't this town taken? He said, hell no. And I said, wow, we're in trouble. So I took off, and he continued his way up forward. That was the closest I ever seen. We took the town without knowing it wasn't taken. Man, I tell you, the OC, the company commander, he really, really screwed up and almost got us all killed. Good thing this infantry company came out and asked us what the hell we was doing up here.
So you're walking around without a care, not knowing you're in danger and there's enemy all around you.
Yeah, that's true. We heard shots going on, firing going on. We didn't know what was going on until they came up and told us we were not supposed to be up there. And we were up there ahead of the infantry. Boy, I tell you, that was one of the screwiest moments I ever experienced.
And I know some of the stuff is difficult to talk about, and I'm not trying to twist your arm. So if you say you don't want to talk about it, don't. You're 95 years old now. It's been 75 years since all this happened. Are there days where you still, in your mind, see or hear or smell something from 75 years ago?
Well, I never forget the smell of death. It's something that you never forget the smell. A body odor, it's one smell you never forget. They had a lot of these cases come up. They were on the wagon. They were all covered with straw, and we were downwind, and then we got a pretty good whiff of it, and we knew exactly what was going on when we got the smell. They were carrying these civilians. They were all on the big wagon. They were covered with straw. All you see was just feet hanging out, bare feet hanging out, and you never forget. There was quite a few civilian casualty I seen, and the smell was horrific, especially when you're downwind.
Did you have a clear understanding of what you were doing there and why it was so important for all you Americans to be there?
Well, we were in there for the service of our country, to liberate the country and help the people out. That was our job. And I was kind of happy to be one of the group that was there to help the people out, liberate and serve my country. And I appreciate for what the country had done for us since I was a kid. And I look around, most of my buddies are gone. I'm very fortunate. The man upstairs taking care of me, so I'm very grateful for that.
And we are grateful for Ray Lee, not to mention the 20,000 other Chinese-American veterans of World War II, as well as the 16 million American men and women who served in our armed forces during that time. You can watch that entire virtual gold medal ceremony at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Once again, our veterans giving us something that even those who so often disagree can find some common ground around. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.